From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network, Dr. Eric Winfrey from Caltech is interviewed by Gen's editor-in-chief John Sterling about DNA computation and the Molecular Programming Project.
Dr. Eric Winfrey is an associate professor of computer science, computation and neural systems, and bioengineering at Caltech. His research covers a wide range of areas in biomolecular computation. Dr. Winfrey, would you define the term biomolecular computation for our listeners?
It's about building circuits out of biological molecules, so DNA, RNA, proteins. And I should emphasize that we're not talking about electronic circuits, we're talking about biochemical circuits, so chemical reactions, enzymes, molecular machines. But the analogy isn't so bad. We all know how electric circuits are used to control all sorts of devices, from a simple thermostat to a sophisticated robot. Biochemical circuits in living cells control all the molecular and chemical events there, from metabolism and replication to the decisions the cell makes about what to do and how to grow and where to move to. But instead of being built out of wires and resistors and capacitors and transistors, the cell's biomolecular circuits are built out of DNA and RNA protein. And instead of using electrons to carry signals, signals in a cell's circuits are individual molecules. So the field of biomolecular computation is about how to design these kinds of biomolecular circuits for artificial applications. Sometimes we want these circuits to work inside living cells, and sometimes we don't. Often we're interested in making complex non-biological chemical systems, but systems that have some intelligence, if you will, to make decisions and take actions at the molecular scale, like computers do at the macroscopic scale. I guess another thing to say is I've been talking about the term biomolecular computation, but you can see that this kind of work is very closely related to other areas such as synthetic biology, DNA nanotechnology, and molecular programming. So it's a blurry line between these areas. There are a lot of people working along this spectrum now.
I've read that your team focuses on coaxing DNA to perform algorithmic tricks. Could you expand on that?
My lab focuses on DNA for all aspects of molecular programming. And most people think of DNA in its biological context. You know, the double helix, it's an information storage molecule, it's an inert thing, and you need enzymes to actually do anything. That's the common view. And that might be how DNA is used in biology, but it's far from the truth about what DNA is capable of as a molecule. And so some people who encounter DNA nanotechnology for the first time feel somewhat like, you know, a banker's son who grew up counting gold coins and silver coins and tin coins and iron coins. So the only thing he thinks metal is good for is making coins. But when he finally ventures out into the wider world, he discovers steel girders supporting skyscrapers and cast iron automobile engines and aluminum bicycles. And he's amazed at all the things that metal can do. And so DNA is like that. It's really amazing. Since Ned Seaman kickstarted the field in the 1980s, folks have figured out how to get DNA to self-assemble into all sorts of shapes and structures, from nanoscale wireframe cubes and tetrahedrons to two-dimensional sheets to arbitrary nanosculptures. For example, a 100 nanometer scale smiley face. So not only structures, but also moving parts have been built. Molecular tweezers that can be opened and closed, DNA fuels that store energy like a spring, DNA motors that can move step-by-step along a DNA track, not only mechanical devices, but computing devices as well, DNA catalysts that can switch on the production or degradation of other DNA molecules, DNA digital logic elements like and or not, and it's a remarkable range of behaviors from such simple building blocks, A, C, T, and G. And so when you put these building blocks together into systems, we can orchestrate their collective behavior and get them to do remarkable things. So the algorithmic tricks are these ways that we can control how DNA behaves.
Let's pick up on that thought for a second. Which specific types of tasks can DNA be programmed to carry out? I think you mentioned a number there, but let's develop that thought a little bit more.
So from a computer scientist's perspective, it's a universal system. So computer scientists have this notion of special purpose computers and universal computers. A special purpose computer is one that is built to do a specific task, such as your cruise control circuit in your automobile. And a general purpose computer or a universal computer is one that can do pretty much anything. It depends upon how you program it. And so if you can specify what you want to do, there's a procedure for how to get that computer to do what you want. That's programming it. And this is the sense in which we're understanding DNA now, is that you can take these basic building blocks, the AND gate, the OR gate, the NOT gate, and couple them together in a systematic way to program it to do anything at the logical scale. That's not to say it can carry out any chemical reaction, but it can carry out any kind of information processing or control reaction. And it's not to say it can carry it out quickly. It might be very slow. In fact, all the things we've built are slow. But we certainly think that there's no particular limit to the level of complexity and sophistication that can be built into the systems we build. That's to say, this is what we think. It looks that way. The kinds of systems that people have been built are, of course, very limited in scale so far. So, you know, for all we know, it's a house of cards that will break down next year. But I would bet a lot of money against that.
What are some biomedical applications for biomolecular computation technology?
There are many people in synthetic biology and DNA nanotechnology who are very interested in these kinds of applications. Different people have different goals. And many people think about applications in biomedicine. Can you make smart drugs where you program how they respond to various environments they encounter in your body to make them target the disease more effectively? Can you make complex materials, like how biology makes very complex materials at the nanoscale, even materials that respond to their environment? Can you self-assemble molecular electronics into very small circuits? Can you augment what can be done with polymer chemistry to make more complex polymers, and what have you? They're potentially a very wide range of applications in nanoscience for these fields, synthetic biology, DNA nanotechnology, molecular programming, where biomolecular computation can be embedded within the chemistry to make a smarter chemistry.
The National Science Foundation funded a Caltech effort entitled the Molecular Programming Project.
Yes.
Which research interests or activities come under the rubric of this project at Caltech?
It's a very broad picture. In some sense, to pick up on the philosophical point, I could say what the motivation for thinking about molecular programming is. So I'd like to try to articulate a convincing picture for how certain parts of chemistry can be treated like computer science. And when we can do that, we can call it molecular programming. So we might want to imagine a chemistry student in the future who sits down and writes computer programs to describe how the molecules should act, the molecules that he's trying to create and synthesize. But then the actual process of making the molecules that act that way is handled automatically. So such a chemistry student wouldn't have to know how to mix test tubes together and analyze the results, maybe except as some basic training. No more so than today's computer science students really need to know how to solder wires together to build an electrical circuit, as long as they know how to program in a high-level programming language. So in computer science, this freedom from the physical details, this ability to think at the abstract level of a program, unleashed enormous creativity and productivity. So if a similar situation can be achieved for molecular systems so that you can reliably program them at an abstract level, then we might imagine it will enable the creation of all sorts of application programs, programs that exist as molecular systems, that manipulate matter and information and energy at the molecular scale, and that can take molecules and physical objects as input and produce molecules and physical objects as output. So that's the vision of molecular programming. And so that's at a broad scale what the Molecular Programming Project is trying to make happen. And of course, we're a long way from this vision right now, and our task is really trying to find the roadmap for how to get there.
This sort of leads into my last question, because this is still a very, very young science. What are the major roadblocks that still need to be overcome to sort of take biomolecular computation, molecular programming to the next level?
There are a lot of roadblocks, so I expect it's going to be a long, hard slog. There are two big issues that come to my mind. The first is that we just don't know enough about how the molecules actually work. So working with DNA, which is a simple molecule, we're surprised every day by what it does or what it doesn't do. So it's not one of those fields where you can just look up a few numbers and equations in a book and calculate exactly what's going to happen, as you might in other areas of engineering. So that's unfortunate but true, and that's a roadblock. What we can do with DNA, at least, thankfully, is to get things almost right quite often. So some of the basic features of DNA, such as the formation of the double helix using Watson-Crick base pairing, is sufficiently predictive that we can design systems at a core scale. So that is, we can make systems, and now reasonably complex systems, that almost work. They work, but they're faulty sometimes. And so that brings us to, I guess, the second big issue, which I think is the major critical intellectual issue here, which is how to design fault-tolerant and error-correcting molecular systems. And there's an enormous body of work on fault tolerance and error correction in the communications and electrical engineering fields, so I'm hoping that will provide tools and insights for how to tackle it in the context of molecular programming. And then if we can make reliable systems from unreliable components, something that von Neumann, one of the fathers of the modern electronic computer, showed was possible in the 1950s, then our vision for molecular programming will be much closer to reality.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. If you would like to comment on this week's podcast, please go to our podcast section at www.genengnews.com and give us your thoughts. We'd really like to hear from you. Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. New GenCasts are posted every week, Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghaus, saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.